morning. Thank you for coming and joining us in another Good Design program. We have some brilliant speakers to come. But you might be like, why is Aaliyah up here? Where's Lloyd? Well, Lloyd doesn't really have much of a voice. Maybe he planned that. We don't know. But I'm here, so I'm glad I can host you through this. Our first speaker is Quinton, and I'm like so tired that I'm about ready to fall asleep, so I'm struggling to get through this. Quinton and his wife are from South Africa, which is pretty cool, and they're loving the Aussie experience. So I'm glad you're loving it, because it's a pretty cool place, I think so. But when Quinton isn't busy preaching or doing a Bible study, he's busy hanging out with the young adults at Kingscliff. And if he's not doing that, he's on adventures. So I'd love to welcome Quinton up to the stage to share about his Good Design concept.
Is this on? Good morning. Good morning, everybody. Thank you so much. It's good to be here. So I'm going to speak about good design and specifically the deluge and the good design. I forgot to get the clicker there. So if you can maybe just go to the next slide. Thanks, Lloyd. So we've had some flooding up north. I think majority of might have heard about that. It was pretty significant. And I just want to spend a few moments talking about how we use design in order to serve our community. As a church, there were many aspects on how we use design to help and equip people in order to serve better. So we've had a pretty significant flooding event. They haven't had any flooding like this, thanks Lloyd, in the history of floods there. So I'm going to speak about, as I said, deluge and design. And so I'm going to start just about the flooding, tell you a bit about that. So this is kind of how the flooding looked like from an aerial view.
For some reason it went off there, Lucas.
There we go. So if you see that, this is the Tweed River over here, and that tree line, that's where the river is supposed to end. All of that should not be underwater. It was a significant amount of water, 1.4 meters higher than the highest flood level in 2017, I think. All of that just covered in water. It was pretty intense for a few days. This is just a Google Maps view. This is Kingscliff Church over here. If you can see over there, and that's the Tweed River. This was flooded all the way. Let me just stand a little bit back. So all the way down there, past the freeway, was just covered in water. So we went out. We were on a tinny. This is at one of the caravan parks, and that was what the caravan park looked like. There's seven caravan parks close to our church. All of them were covered in water. You can imagine most of these people are vulnerable people already. Some of them said it costs, $7,000 to $12,000 per year just for the insurance. They can't afford that. So majority of them, they don't have any insurance. So not only were their houses wrecked, their cars were wrecked. It was a pretty intense situation to get into. Here we on a tinny on our way to just go give some water to about 70 people. Here's one guy trying to get out but got stuck there. And that's about, 200 meters from where the river is supposed to be. So you can imagine this was pretty significant. This is our church, and this is the lowest building at Kingscliff Church. And we were spared from being flooded. This is the only place where it came really close by, and it just went over that last little step into where this is where we have the Arise classes. And it just went about 10 centimeters before the entrance of the door. So it was pretty significant. That's our church, and you can see it's just water everywhere. We've never had water up to these levels. And so when this happened, we had to say to ourselves, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And from the Monday that it started, I just went about 10 o'clock on the Monday, went to church, and the flood levels were rising. I was speaking to our caretakers, looking at how things were. We were kind of planning on what we were going to do. Thought it would be a kind of minor flood. Around about 7 o'clock, I went in again, and I was on a paddleboard. It was already significantly higher than it was in the morning. And as I went back, there were people taking people out of the caravan parks in kayaks. There were no SES. There were no professional individuals helping us. It was just community members. By that night, we were all ferrying people to the TAFE. And one of the things that I immediately saw is that it's just chaos. Nobody really knew what they were doing. Everybody was trying their best, but there was no design. There was no structure. Everybody was just taking them to the TAFE. But when you got to the TAFE, it was just chaos. And so the next morning, I drove up to the TAFE and I said, hey, can I speak to the person who's in charge? And the guy I was talking to was saying, hey, I've just been here 45 minutes and I'm in charge of this area now, but I don't really know what's going on. And so we kind of looked around. Luckily, by that time, I heard that another church who's actually renting our church on Sundays, they were kind of getting volunteers together. And so I phoned the pastor there. I said to him, hey, do you need anything? He says, at the moment, it's just chaos. We don't really know what we're doing. We'll let you know. About 20 minutes later, I got another phone call from an individual in our church. He says, hey, I run a massive business. Most of my business is online. I want to build a website so that we can find out what's the need in the community and also how we can get volunteers to sign up if they want to do anything. So we designed a website. While that was going on, I got another phone call from another pastor in the area from the COC church. And he said, hey, our church was used in the 2017 flood, but we're underwater. Can we use your facility? I said, 100%, we're here to serve. And then I thought, man, let's all just work together. So I immediately phoned the other pastor and we decided to come together. So this is our first meeting, the Thursday, and we've quickly put our heads together and said, what can we do? We realized very quickly that there are tons of people that want to volunteer, but there's no organization, there's no design that would be able to focus them where to go. And God just sent us the right people. The one individual, you can't really see her in the picture now, but she's just standing there. She was one of the key organizers in the previous flood. There was another lady that comes to our church. Our church runs a U3A program, and they have various programs that run throughout the day. Our church is open 6 days a week, 7 days a week now. And she went to the TAFE and said, hey, how can I help? She worked with Federal Police for 35 years, and she has tons of experience in disasters. She was at the Bali bombings and all, and they just said, no, we don't need you. And somebody said to her, hey, go to the Kingsliff Church. They're setting up something there. They came to us, and she said, oh, I know this church. Not a Christian lady. Came to our church, and immediately we could utilize her. And her design sense in terms of designing systems that would help people was just phenomenal. So we got together, we prayed, and we said, God, how can we work together and set up the systems and the structures, design what we need to design so that people can work more effectively? And that was the Thursday. We ran then every single day for about a week after that, and we had between 3,000 to 4,500 volunteers that came in and served our community. We were one of the best recovery centers. We chose a name called the Chindera Flood Recovery Center. My wife is a graphic designer, and so immediately we utilized her gifting. And we designed various designs to tell people what we needed. So we used platforms like Facebook groups, like Kingscliff Happenings and various groups like that. We posted consistently on there. And so they immediately said to us, when you send us something, we'll put that up as priority. And so she constantly designed stuff we needed. You know, if we needed buckets, if we needed gurneys, if we needed volunteers, whatever we needed, we would design something and put it on there. And so we started with the cleanup, and part of our design was not merely getting the word out there, but also designing systems. And so we had a front desk. People would walk in on one side. If you needed help, you could go and sign up on what you needed. And on the other side, you could sign up as a volunteer, or you could go and bring in stuff. So here you can see we've had so many buckets, so many individuals bringing stuff. Here's the lady. We had some politicians come and see how our system worked. We had tons of journalists there as well, because our design was so good and it moved so many people that they were like, wow, this is quite impressive. So this is the lady, her name is Gail, and she was just explaining her whiteboard. So to you, it might seem like chaos, but it worked like a charm. Because internet was down, because all of these systems were down, we had to go back to this. And so what she would do is she would write down each place that we needed to go to, whether it is a caravan park and whether it is a house, whether it's a region. At one point, we were sending out buses. We sent about 200 volunteers down to Lismore, a few to Karakai, a few to Woodburn. Like, we eventually went further than just our specific area. But it was all because she had a great design. So she would say, okay, where do you need to go? What do you need? She would send out a grouping there, and if you've done it, you would report back. So the design worked very, very well in order to be more effective in what we did. We also had various rooms in our church that was used for specific things. So one was specifically only for linen, one was specifically only for food and soft items. This room, there you can see some more supplies being given. And this room, for instance, it filled up and depleted about 5 times just on the Sunday. So just as it got empty, people would bring stuff again, and we'd fill it up again, and we'd go empty again, and we'd fill up again. And so we went for at least a Saturday and Sunday. It happened quite significantly. We had tons of water here. Eventually, as we were growing, a lot of people came and attached themselves to what we were doing. So we had surf life clubs there. We had tons of people coming and say, hey, we would, you know, we'd do a cookout for people. We'd come and just feed the volunteers. We'd bring water. We'd bring stuff. And so a lot of people came to us and said, man, we can see this is a well-oiled machine, so how can we assist to this? And that was part of our success, I think, is the design behind that. Part of our work was not only getting things in, but also sending volunteers out. So we had specific plans at each place, what they needed to do, how they could assist.
Thank you, thank you.
And then part of our job was was not just telling people what we need, but also consistently thanking them and saying thank you for your ministry, but also keeping them up to date on what is needed. And here, design was super important as well. So if you think about design, we needed design for getting the word out there. So we used the graphic designer for that, but we also used design in terms of designing a website, with designing systems, and then also using a videographer to design a video to say thank you for what we have done and what we still need. So I'll just quickly show you this short little video.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. I cannot thank this community enough for everything that they've done in our community that's in need. So many people's lives have been wrecked with this flood, and our community came up and stepped up to the plate, and there were so many volunteers that have come in the last week or so to our community to help, and we just want to say thank you so much. Whether it was through monetary donations, whether it was gifts that they brought, or whether it was services, human resources, youth, whatever it was, people came in the bucket loads, and we just want to say thank you to everybody. At the moment, what we do still need is we need financial support. We need financial donations in order to help people that need to rebuild their lives. We definitely need skilled laborers that can help us rebuild and assist whatever is there still needs to be done. And then we definitely need corporate sponsors to step in and help. There's a tremendous amount of need, not just in our local community of Kingscliff and Fingal and Chindera, but broader Malambimbi, Mwilumba, you know, Tobolgam, and down all the way to Lismore, and even further. A lot of support that is needed, and we want to see how much we can really help. Currently, we are trying to organize and get our brains together with all the communities that have helped, all the churches that have been a part of this massive project, the Seventh-day Adventist Church, the Garden Church, the Tweed Coast Church, and as well as other community leaders. We've had various individuals reach out to us and ask us how can they be of need, how can they be of help, and we want to partner with as many people to serve our community. So in the next few months, we might call on you to help. Please come and assist. But for now, we just want to say thank you. Thank you so much for everything that you have done. Thank you, thank you.
So that was just a short little video that we wanted to send out, and we actually sent out a few of them, and that was the last one that we sent out just to remind people of what we still needed. And so we realized, we realized from the get-go that God is a God of order, and we know this as Christians, and we know that we as human beings like order, and order and structure and design work well together to be more effective in what we needed to do. And so that's what we try to implement in our greatest need and be able to serve our community. We also went beyond that. We realized that, you know, organizing mud armies and doing those things is but just one step. So we realized that a lot of people would go through significant trauma. And we decided to, with Arise and with Kingsliff Church, we decided to have an evangelistic campaign that was already planned. We have Arise at our church, and Arise is part of our evangelistic program that we have there. And we had an evangelistic program already planned for Kingsliff. And last year, when we had one, we did it on emotional resiliency. We realized that mental health is a big area that we can speak well into. And so we had this already planned. But as the flood happened, we realized that we can utilize this element. And so we had to redesign the posters and our advertisement. And this is what we came up with, is building back, dealing with the impact of disaster and trauma. So you can see it's kind of a heart with beautiful design. It was very captivating. And part of our mission with this was to realize that people are struggling, not just because they lost their homes, but because they have significant trauma. One individual that I spoke to mentioned to me that he was from Lismore, but he attends Kingsliff Church. And he said right before the flood happened, he was about to move out of his house. And so he acquired a new property way above the flood level. And there was no ideas that any flooding would come. So 2 weeks before the flood started, it settled. And he was about to move the week that the flood happened. And when the flood happened, it completely devastated his house. He lost everything. Luckily, he had a place to stay. And so now he had to move into this new place. And tons of people were bringing him furniture and, you know, helping him. And so he's getting furniture in. But he says every time that he walked into his house, he would disassociate because it's a new house. It's furniture that's not his. It's his house, but it's not his house. It's his furniture, but it's not his furniture. And then he said he felt so guilty for asking people because now he's still struggling to rebuild his house. He didn't have any insurance. But at the same time, he felt that he was so incredibly blessed that at least he has a house and he has some furniture. Some people have nothing. And he was just sitting with me, and he was just crying and saying, man, I just don't know how to make sense of it. There's so much trauma around this. People think that they've done enough now because they, you know, came in for a day or two or three to clean out the place. But there's so much more hurt and trauma that needs to be processed. He was telling me about his son as well that's going through a similar process. And so we saw that this was an amazing project once again for the church to step into and invite people to find that healing. That's a long process. So we just finished that about a week ago. And we still plan to have various more of these programs. While this was going on, we had North New South Wales Resiliency. After they saw what was happening at the church and how well our program functioned, they said, hey, can we come and set up our North New South Wales or New South Wales Resilience team in your church? So they were there for 4 weeks every single day from Monday to Friday. They set up various programs. And St. John's was there. There was New South Wales Resilience. There was Centrelink, various programs that were there in church. And once again, we had to get the word out. So we had to have designs ready to send it out and tell people where they can go. We had to get boards up and all of those things. At the moment, what we are working on now, so New South Wales Resiliency has just ended their stint now. So they finished. We've just finished this. So now we're moving into the second phase. So now the churches that were involved with that, the Kingsliff Church, the Garden Church, the COC Church, and now we've the churches that have joined us now as well as the Anglican Church and the C3 Church have all banded together and say, okay, now what's next? So now we've come together and say we're going to start a new organization that's going to be a group of churches that say that we care for our community. We're going to start something brand new, choose a new name, choose a new logo, and make sure that for the foreseeable future, we'll be the community project that will go into the community to all the vulnerable people, and they'll get to know who we are. And also set up training programs for churches and communities and individuals and individual homes so that they know what to do in the next flood. We're busy working with ADRA to see if we can put up some sheds in our community and do some programming and speak to the SES. So there's a lot of design in designing the systems on how that will work and how we will respond if something happens again, but also using creative designs like videos and graphic design, all of these things to get the word out. So that's what we've been doing throughout all of this. And I've just realized that if you just put out, we just saw that if you put stuff out and it's not well designed, people will still listen to it, but there's something about a good design that just grabs attention very quickly and can get and communicate whatever you need to communicate very effectively. And it is something that is geared and wired in us. God created us for beauty. God created us for design. It's something that resonates in us. And even through very difficult times, we can utilize designs, whether it is a design of a system, whether it's design of a program, whether it's actual artistic design. All of those things are elements that we can use to be effective in various situations. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Quinton, for sharing. That was a really good incorporation of design and technologies in a really relevant and, just recent experience. So thank you. Our next speaker is Lindell. And Lindell and her family come from Melbourne. What a cool place. But Lindell loves to find creative and new ways to share Jesus, which is amazing. So I'd love to welcome Lindell to the stage.
Thank you. And it's feeling very Melbourne-like today with all the rain. And so today I wanted to talk about sleep of all things. And I've entitled it Jesus Slept, but I think looking from the perspective of good design, I'd like to highlight how we are in fact, as individuals, designed to sleep. Who feels like sleeping at the moment? I know, it's a bit like that. And we as individuals, though, are designed for our bodies to not only rest, but to sleep. And Scripture has a lot to say about sleep. So I thought I'd share on this topic that I'm particularly passionate about this morning. Now, as our beautiful host mentioned, I'm from Melbourne. I actually grew up in Melbourne, but we worked in Sydney for 10 odd years and have only moved back. We moved back at the beginning of 2019. And as you're all aware, 2020... it's a particularly exciting year in the history of the world, but especially so in Melbourne. So when the COVID pandemic first hit, we were actually travelling in Tasmania. I was doing the big camp, doing the youth tent, and Adrian and the girls had come as well. And so we flew back to Melbourne and started receiving notifications about, firstly from my office, recalling everyone who's travelling, and then about temperature checks and all this sort of stuff and this COVID thing. And I remember chatting to Adrian, and the first thing we did was like we took our temperatures because we'd just been on a plane. And we're like, oh, what if we've got it without even knowing? Anyway, roll forward a couple of months and Melbourne hit our first lockdown. And we went into lockdown feeling incredibly like... sort of like ready, you know, we were prepared, we had our garden, we had our sourdough stuff we were going to do, we were really buying into the whole, let's make the most of this time, the world is winding down, we're resting, let's stay at home, let's do our bit. Something I should also mention is I'd only returned to work in February from having my second child, Chloe, so I had a 7-month-old and then, what's 7 plus 22? Like a 3-something-year-old? At home. And so lockdown meant that childcare was no longer available. The childcare of my mother and father was no longer available. So we had to adjust to this new frame of two parents working full time with small children at home. And so for the first lockdown, we managed. We had a schedule, we were organized. I did all my grocery shopping online, it got delivered, we were safe, and we emerged out of the first lockdown pretty unscathed. And then the second one came. And then the third one came. And then the fourth one came. And I think by the fourth one, it got to the point where I could wake up in the morning and I could tell whether we were locked down or not as to the amount of traffic I could hear on the road. So now whenever I wake up and it's a quiet morning, I kind of start to twitch and go, what's going on? What's going on? Anyway, by the fourth lockdown, we thought we had it down pretty pat. But with young children and both my husband and I working full time, we started to develop this really insane schedule. So I would get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, often a little bit earlier, and I would start to do my emails and things like that. My husband would get up and do his exercise, and the girls would get up at 7:30. And we had the day divided into shifts. So I would take 4 hours, and then he would take 4 hours, and then we'd have to trade time depending on meetings. And then eventually we'd make it to the end of the day, and the kids would go to bed at 7 o'clock, and Adrian and I would retreat to our offices, and we'd put in more work till about 12 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, or 1 o'clock in the morning. And we maintained this for weeks, and it was exhausting. Some nights we were getting 4 or 5 hours sleep. And so I emerged out of the end of lockdown feeling incredibly frustrated at my body, because I thought to myself, if only I didn't have to sleep. Why is sleep a requirement? This is incredibly frustrating. Can I just, you know, there's so much to be done, there's so little time, but we need to sleep. Why would God design our bodies that way? He could have chosen any way to design our bodies, right? We could have just needed 2 hours. That would be phenomenal. I could get so much done. And I work with a colleague who will remain nameless, who is one of those people that sleeps like 4 hours a night and is still functioning. Does not work for me. For some reason, we were designed to sleep. We were designed to rest. And for us, pandemic life was just unsustainable. I don't even know how we survived by the end of it, but we did. You managed, you know. And we were doing our bit, because I know it's been an awful time. It's nice to be coming out of that. But I knew that when I'm not well rested, when I was existing on just 4 or 5 hours of sleep, I was an awful human being to be around. My work suffered, my family suffered, my relationship suffered. Fast forward to only a couple of weeks ago, and I had to do a trip. And we call these like a day trip interstate. And in the union office, these are like the worst of the worst, because it's spending one day interstate and coming back for a various reason. It often means waking up. For me, it was waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning to catch a 6 a.m. flight, and then doing whatever needed to be done interstate. And then I returned. I think I flew into Melbourne Airport at about 10 o'clock at night. And then my husband had a wedding in Ballarat the next day. So then I drove to Ballarat, arrived at Ballarat at midnight, fell into bed, got up the next morning, attended a wedding. And I'm not saying this so you feel sorry for me. This is just my job. It's just the reality of life, and that's okay. And anyway, after the wedding, we got home, put the kids in bed, and we sat on the couch, and it was 7 o'clock. And I said to Adrian, you know what? I think I could go to sleep. And he was like, what? It's 7 o'clock. And I was like, no, I'm pretty sure I could go to sleep. He's like, you're crazy. Don't go to sleep now. You'll wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning, or, you know, some ridiculous hour, and you won't be able to get back to sleep. Why would you want to do that? I'm like, no, I'm pretty sure I could go to sleep. So I went to bed at 7:30, and I did not wake again until 7:30. Slept for 12 hours. My body was telling me it needed sleep. We were designed for some reason to need sleep. But so many times I've thought to myself, if only I didn't have to. If only I didn't have to sleep. And you know, the health message that we preach, it says eat well, drink well, rest well. And we think of the Sabbath, right? We think of resting at a rhythm of rest one day a week. But we don't ever talk about sleep. So what do we really mean when we talk about sleep? And so I've entitled this, Jesus Slept. Because if Jesus is our great example, he actually slept as well, because he needed to sleep. So I'm going to do a really awful thing that speakers do all the time that I personally don't really enjoy when I'm in the crowd, because I'm like only just an extrovert. I'm mostly introvert. But I'm going to ask for some audience participation here. So apologies in advance. But I need you to put your hand up. Like, just keep your hand up. I was going to ask everyone to stand, but this is way more comfortable. So just everyone hold your hand up. And I'm going to do a little bit of market research around sleep, okay? So on average, how much sleep do you get? The reality is only two-thirds of Australians, sorry, I'm keeping your hands up, you can put it down for a minute. Only two-thirds of Australians get, because I forgot to mention this, only two-thirds of Australians are getting enough sleep, okay? So we're going to try and figure out how we fit among that. So enough sleep is about... So it says, according to my research, adults aged 18 to 65 should be getting between 7 to 9 hours of sleep every night. Okay, so hands up. Put your hand up if you average, I'm going to start nice and high. Keep your hand up if you average about... Okay, no, sorry. Put your hand down if you average 10 out. No, keep them up. Sorry. I'm really stuffing this up because I'm used to telling people to stand up. So I'm trying to do something nice. Everyone's hands up. Put your hand down if you're on 10 hours of sleep on average. Oh, I saw a little bit of movement, but no. Okay, put your hand down if you're on 9 hours of sleep per average. Okay, one. Teenagers should be putting your hands down. You guys need lots of sleep. You're growing. Put your hands down if you're on 8 hours of sleep per average. Yeah, that's about me too. Okay, it's pretty standard. Put your hands down if you're on 7 hours of sleep. Okay, we're doing really well. 6 hours? 5 hours? Lloyd, the camp is different. Anyone is one of those unicorns that's like a 4 hour sleep person? We do. Well, apparently there is a very rare gene that very few people have. It's a gene mutation where you can exist and function as a normal human being on just 4 hours sleep. But it is incredibly rare. So it's probably, there's the chances of it being that. The reality is we're doing pretty well. So maybe you guys don't need to hear this talk and I'll just sit down. But one third of Australians are actually not getting enough sleep. So why did God design us to need sleep? Because I could be so much more effective. I could get so much more done if I didn't have to. You know, we sleep a third of our lives. Amen. A third of our lives are spent just like conked out on a bed, absolutely useless to nobody, to no purpose. Everything that's left undone, physically just inert. You're of no use to anyone while you are asleep. I remember when my first child was born and I'd be up at night feeding. I was incredibly productive because I would feed Chloe with one hand and with my other hand I could do online shopping, I could do emails, I could do all this sort of stuff. And mind you, I was sleep deprived, but I could be so productive overnight. We could get so much done if only we didn't need to sleep, right? Well, those living in medieval times had this figured out. Doesn't this look like a fun sleeping situation? So let's take a step back into the time of, the 17th century. And if you look at historical documents, you get a little bit of an insight into how they slept. So in the 17th century, a night of sleep went a little something like this. Now, I should also mention, everyone sort of slept in the same room together first. This is kind of really unusual to our Western 21st century minds. They would all sleep together, even if you had people traveling that you did not know. They would come and sleep in the same room with you. In fact, it was so common that there was a social construct around it. So, for example, the mother and the father would sleep on one end, and then the female children would sleep descending in age, and then the male children would sleep ascending in age. So if you were the oldest boy in the family, you were the one that had to sleep next to the stranger. I'm sorry. And then obviously any strangers or travellers that came along. So this was just the way that they did it. Now, what they would do is at about 9 o'clock, everyone would go to bed. Everyone in the household will go to bed. Who's got a 9 o'clock bedtime? Sounds wonderful, doesn't it? I love sleep. This is what I love to talk about. So at about 9 o'clock, everyone would go to bed. If you were wealthy, you had a mattress or a bed like that. I've got another picture here. Oh, look at them all tucked in together. Isn't that lovely? So if you were wealthy, you had a bed or a mattress like that. Otherwise, you just try to find some sort of soft grass or a spot on the floor to sort of lay down. And you wouldn't be by yourself. You'd be tucked in with all these other people. But thankfully, there were strict social conventions. So you'd fall asleep at 9 o'clock, and then by about... you'd fall asleep for a couple of hours, and then by about... between about 11 p.m., and 1 a.m., everyone would get up. Someone's in the front, like, oh. Everyone would wake up between 11 p.m. and 1 a.m. No alarm clock. This is just the way that their bodies were trained to do it. And not because someone woke them up or anything like that. Alarm clocks weren't even invented yet. In fact, fun fact, the guy who invented the alarm clock was actually a clock salesman that kept being late to his work every day. So he made one. Anyway, side note. So between 11 and 1 p.m. And they would do, this period of time was called the watch. And you'd do a whole variety of things. You'd add wood to the fire. You would take medicine or remedies. Or some people would brew beer at this time of the night. Some would tend to farm animals or household chores. But the most common thing that people would do between 11 and 1 p.m. and 1 a.m. was they would socialize. They would get up, they would make a cuppa, and they would just chat. Like, why? Why are we doing this, medieval people? Why do you want to get up and have a conversation in the middle of the night? And then they would go back to sleep at about 1 o'clock in the morning and sleep through till 7 or 8 o'clock. Really strange thing. They got up to get things done. Okay, so we don't do that because God designed our bodies to need rest. But why? Why don't we get up and have a pause and do something fun? Well, Jesus slept. God himself, in full humanity, would have closed his eyes and gone to sleep. And not once or twice in his ministry, but every single day. Of his 30 plus years dwelling in an earthly body on our earth, we can assume that he himself would have spent roughly a third of his life sleeping, just like we do. He not only ate, drank, celebrated like every other human, but he also became tired. John tells us he was weary from his journey when he sits at the well and meets the woman from Sychar. And it wasn't a sin or a fault. It wasn't a flaw in his body or a failing in Jesus that he became tired. It was just the reality of existing in a human body. It is okay, it is human to be tired and need sleep. And I want to argue this morning that God, tell you this morning, that God designed sleep to be an act of worship. Okay? I know that sounds crazy, but the Bible's signature statement on sleep goes like this. And I've used the English Standard Version because I like the way that it refers to us. It says, "It is in vain that you rise up early and go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil. For he, God, gives to his beloved sleep." Sleep is a gift to God's beloved. In the NLT, it says, "It's useless for you to work so hard, anxiously working for food to eat, for God gives rest to his loved ones." And all throughout Psalms, he talks about this. "I lie down and sleep. I wake again because the Lord sustains me. He will not let you stumble. The one who watches over you will not slumber. Indeed, he who watches over Israel never slumbers or sleeps. In peace, I will lie down and sleep, for you alone, O Lord, will keep me safe." God gives sleep, or designed sleep, designed us to need rest as an expression of his love. We are his beloved. So God made us spend a third of our lives like this, unconscious, inactive, exposed, dependent, unproductive, doing nothing, useless, vulnerable. This nightly reminder of our frailty and limitations. We are creatures and not the creator. To think, if only I work harder, I stay up later, I get up earlier, if only I sacrifice my sleep, then I can get things done or things will be better. But the passage in Psalm says this is vanity, or literally emptiness. Now, God gives sleep to his beloved. It is an act of love for us. Now, don't get me wrong, because it is good to sacrifice sleep also. So Jesus not only sanctified sleep, but he sacrificed it. And think, for example, two examples. The first was when it came to choosing his apostles. In Luke, it tells us that he went out to the mountain to pray, and all night he stayed awake in prayer to his Father. And when the day came, he called his apostles and chose them. Kind of an important job. The second time that Jesus sacrificed sleep was in the Garden of Gethsemane. It was late in the night. Jesus and his disciples were exhausted, but Jesus himself, knowing what lay before him, did not give himself to sleep, but readied himself in prayer. Though his disciples, we know, fell asleep three times. So Jesus not only sanctified our sleep, but he sacrificed sleep. When the time came, he was willing to deny himself God's good gift of sleep because of a higher purpose. And this speaks to God designing a rhythm of rest for us. On the one hand, Jesus sanctified it. Remember in Mark 6, after feeding all these people, Jesus says to his disciples, come away, let's rest a while. Sanctified sleep, sanctified rest time. And then also in Gethsemane, we come back and he tells his disciples, stay awake, stay awake, stay awake. Sacrifice your sleep for a higher cause. There are times to enjoy God's gift of sleep and times to deny ourselves in light of a higher calling. And I think as leaders, as people of God, as Christians, we are called to become both embracers of sleep by default. In other words, that's our default setting. But sleep deniers when necessary. Sleep embraces and sleep deniers. The problem is that too often we become sleep deniers by default. And you know what happens when you aren't well rested? They say that when you're driving a car without adequate amounts of sleep, you may as well be drunk. The problem is too often we become sleep deniers. So for example, we've all been there late on a Friday night getting something done for church the next day, or we lose sleep over challenging issues, conflict at church, pain in our lives, stressful situations at work that keep us up at night, or we sacrifice sleep because of something really good, like a noble thing, like helping someone in a crisis. Like what Quinton talked about, the effort and work that goes into the serving a community. It might be because of major events like Pathfinder camps or big camp and all this sort of stuff. Or we sacrifice sleep because we get so busy that we just run out of time doing all of the things. And so none of these in and of themselves are bad, because it is good to sacrifice sleep. Jesus did it. But what is our overall rhythm of rest? Are we sacrificing our sleep because we're trying to do everything ourselves? Are we sacrificing sleep because we don't believe God has truly got this? Or are we sacrificing sleep maybe because we're just not good at time management? What is our overall rhythm of rest? There'll be times when our faith requires us to relinquish control, close our eyes, and just go to bed. But there will also be times when our faith requires us to climb out of our toasty warm bed, get up, splash water on our face, and get on with serving God faithfully, finding a rhythm of rest. The reason I say that sleep is an act of worship is because of this. Think about it this way. Every night, you hop into bed, and imagine if we said in prayer, all right, God, I'm done for the night. I'm clocking off. You're in control now. I'm tapping out. You know, you're not that he's always in control, but you know, you're hand over to you. You've got this. There's nothing more I can do. I'm going to go to sleep. Sleep is a parable that God is God and we are human. God handles the world quite nicely while one hemisphere sleeps. So I want you to think that every night when you close your eyes and fall asleep, we are recognizing that God is sovereign. It is an act of worship, and sovereignty that extends beyond just physical rest that we are created to need, but our spiritual rest as well. Every sleep is a tiny little metaphor for how we cannot do enough to work out our own salvation. We cannot be enough. We cannot do enough things. We cannot read enough. We cannot pray enough. We cannot do not all of the things, but rather it is God that does that. I cannot do it all. And so God designed us to be completely useless to the world for 7 to 9 hours every night as a reminder that he is creator. We are created. He is sovereign. We are human, and that our trust and our anxieties and our worries of this world should be passed over to him. And every night we practice that, we're declaring that God is sovereign and king of the universe. And I think that is a pretty brilliant design. I think that's a pretty brilliant design. So when you go to bed tonight, I encourage you, place it all on Jesus. Say, this is my act of worship, and I'm just going to leave it to God, because you can handle this while I go to sleep and do nothing for 7 to 9 hours.
Thank you. That was amazing and so insightful. I'm so keen to have some awesome worship early tonight. I'd just like to say a huge thank you to both Quinton and Lindell. You guys were amazing, and I loved hearing what you said and your design processes. But there's someone else that I want to thank, and yeah, he's been really awesome in getting this week to flow nicely and this program to happen. So can we please give a round of applause to Lloyd? Thank you so much for coming. Unfortunately, this is our last program, so I very much hope you guys have enjoyed this week as much as I have. And yeah, we will see you tonight.